Welcome to the Underwater Technology Podcast from SUT, the Society for Underwater Technology. My name's Steve Hall, I'm the CEO, and each week we're bringing you interviews with key individuals from underwater industry, academia, researchers, policy, and more. Podcast 6. My guest this week is Tony Lane from the National Subsea Research Initiative in Aberdeen, Scotland.
Good afternoon, Steve. Thanks for this opportunity. My name's Tony Lane. I've been involved in the subsea sector since 1982, starting my career on the defence sector in Edinburgh, and then progressing, moving into the subsea sector within oil and gas. For that period, which is obviously some years now, I have held a number of key roles, either as leading technology in technologies developments or commercialization of technologies and growth businesses. This has ranged from SMEs, small, medium-sized enterprises, to super large majors such as Schlumberger. In addition to that, I have supported and worked within operators, predominantly Marathon in the UK and in Norway.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Tony. And tell me a little bit more about your role with NSRI.
So for the last 2 years, I have led and head up NSRI. We are an industry body that's impartial and agnostic across the subsea sector.
Excellent. Thanks, Tony. And where are we going to focus on in our talk today?
Well, I think the key thing to me is about how we can maximise the opportunities within the subsea sector. We all recognise that subsea within the oil and gas sector has grown significantly since the late 80s. I think from a UK perspective, some may consider it's been led, or UK has taken a leading role within subsea within oil and gas, of which it is over the last, let's say, 20 years has really migrated globally. And at the end of the day, we've got to look at where oil and gas is going, relative speaking, to the energy sector. And if we look at policy and regulation, there is a driver to reduce the carbon footprint. And we really have to sort of say there's a massive opportunity to continually grow subsea across a variety of industries.
Okay. And it's true to say that NSRI isn't actually a funding organisation as such, is it?
That's correct. NSRI is not a funding body. We are here to enable industry-led opportunities. We're also here to, we'll call it broker or support technology minds in looking at the business side of things from a commercialization point of view, where they could get funding, assist them in funding applications, assisting them in looking at where the opportunities and the growth are. People speak about commercialization as something that happens at the end of what people generally recognize as the technical readiness level. I would dispute that being incorrect. I would say that really the technology commercialization piece starts at the beginning of the journey. I've got a good idea. How much is that idea reality? And is it contributing to the business, and does it create a business? Mm-hmm. We have to be very critical of that and honest. And I think part of the challenges we have, we all like technology, particularly in today's society where we've adopted in day-to-day life many technologies. However, the business opportunity and the funding opportunity are not tied up enough and robustly enough. The role that NSRI take is we take people through the opportunity, addressing some of the challenges and aim to get people in a better position to either speak to the market, speak about funding opportunities, and getting them generally in a better position to be investor ready, understanding the proposition and the wider market opportunity.
Okay, so it's fair to say that a key part of your role is how you accelerate economic growth within this broader blue economy.
Absolutely. You know, we don't profess to be experts, although I would like to think that we've got a really good understanding of the markets. And the market's been across multiple industries. That could be oil and gas through the life cycle from field developments all the way through to decommissioning, or more appropriate today, repurpose. But equally so, if we take the defence sector, which is obviously a long-standing, very, very credible industry across worldwide, and so there's many synergies between defence and oil and gas. And then if we look at some of the newer industries, and I'm speaking about industries such as the renewable sector, there's many lessons can be learned across the renewable sector, drawing from likes of defence and oil and gas. And we should be, and that's both ways, of course, because we're both learning every day.
Yeah. So for any of our listeners who are not familiar with this phrase of the blue economy, how would you describe it or sum it up?
So to me, the blue economy is everything that's in the within the blue domain. That's the ocean, the sea, the river, etc. I think some definitions, including activities within ports, etc., we tend to focus on defence, oil and gas, wind, wave, current, tidal, and aquaculture. And if you look at some of what that really means, generally within the blue economy, from we'll call it hard-nosed figures. Some estimate, and these figures are in the public domain, some estimate by 2030 globally, we will have somewhere in the region of about $3 trillion US dollars in growth in wind and aquaculture. Within oil and gas, it's about $1.5 trillion. Now, we can challenge these figures according to economics, and there's various downturns, as we can all accept today. However, it offers the level of magnitude. Relative to the UK, of course, these figures are quite impressive from a percentage of that global market. They reckon that circa of 40% of that global market sits with the opportunity within the UK.
It's impressive. You know, it's still an area where the UK is a key player, isn't it, Tony?
Absolutely. And some of the projects that we've been involved in, really assisting government bodies and government agencies, are international projects. They're how we can maximise the growth within the UK and develop them in the wider international arena. Okay. At the end of the day, we've got some great assets, great minds, great technologies. We don't have all the answers, of course. We've got certain key areas and certain niche areas that have grown. However, there's certain international markets that we may offer something different. And it's bridging that coming of minds and market opportunity together to achieve some of these growth figures.
And it's fair to say that subsea industries have many common needs, don't they?
Absolutely. If you look at across the wide spectrum of these different industries, there are many different areas that can contribute to the growth. If we even, you know, if we want to work from the seabed, we'll call it up and consider the lifetime, you know, foundations and moorings is a good example. Very common across all these industries. And when we move into things like offshore floating wind, I don't believe we've really started to understand the opportunities there. Yes, there's organizations that are touching that, recognise some of the near-term opportunities. Most of them, of course, are on the top side or within the airspace. However, if you look at foundations and moorings, that is a particularly, pardon the pun, dynamic area of which oil and gas has been faced with, particularly with floating production storage offloading vessels, which we recognise and have got a great depth of knowledge from, in particularly in the deep water area and in harsh environments. And then if you look at the aspect of autonomous vehicles and autonomy, and we'll bring robotics into that.
Yes.
A number of operators have made quite a clear direct statement, all in the public domain, where they're actually saying by 2025, which is not that far away, that they want to do their operations in a fully autonomous way. And that's basically having such as ASVs, AUVs, automatic surface vessels and automatic underwater vessels going off, doing their operation, either returning back to beach or storing themselves subsea in a subsea environment. That's quite an impressive vision. However, it's not an entirely new vision, it's just that we've got the technology there. I personally was involved in a project with what was FSSL, formerly Ferranti Subsea Systems, Shell and Mobil in the mid-80s, where the outcome of this GIP-type project was they wanted to have a vehicle in a garage, as they were called it then, sitting there, charging up, and then the adjacent guys as a toolbox. From that toolbox, they would go off and do its operations and then go back to the garage again. Sounds very simplistic. In those days, we didn't have the technology for it. Today, we are almost there in many different aspects. That's not to say there's still one or two areas to be developed and refined, of course, but it just shows you there's been a long-term vision of where we can be tomorrow.
Excellent. And it's also things like the materials we're using and the sensors, all kinds of areas that are connected across these industries, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the material side of things is quite important. You know, we hear about certain industries being challenged with corrosion. And corrosion in the marine environment, particularly where there's high oxygenated areas, is often a challenge. You know, if I say to somebody, you know, something's got to be made of stainless steel, and we can reflect on the tables and look at stainless steel, it will corrode as fast as anything in the right environment. It's up to us as an industry to make sure that we have the right selection of materials for the right job and protect it, such as with cathodic protection, coatings, etc. It's not a straightforward process. There is standards for that in certain industries. In other industries are still in the learning mode. We have to bring these standards forward and accelerate the learning mode.
Okay. And the drivers for the oil and gas industry are similar to the things we're seeing in the other areas, aren't they? You know, things like distances, demanning, reducing the carbon footprint. You know, how would you go further on that?
Absolutely. You know, it goes, if we look at, say, distances as an example, some of the challenges we have within, let's say, cables within the renewable sector, and I'm not going to go into using great depths simply because that's a whole podcast in itself, but it's all about the dynamics and distance. If we look at, as an example, if we look at the oil and gas sector, distances are quite phenomenal today. And we're still faced with many challenges, but there's some great learning there. Today, the longest subsea tieback is about 220 kilometres. One of the operators is putting a lot of investment in R&D, particularly for electrification of systems, which their long-term vision for distance is 600 kilometres. That's a huge, huge distance to overcome. But the technology is not that far from it. And then if you look at the whole aspect of health and safety and carbon footprint, as you mentioned, Steve, demining of facilities and operations is a key part to that. So it brings in the subject matter of sensors, condition and monitoring, autonomy and robotics. And as I said, we mentioned about materials as well. I think when you look at the big value piece in reducing carbon footprint is direct emissions, imported of energy, and end user products. There's a whole raft of the whole decarbonisation piece and what we can do with the footprint of that. And the footprint is, one, it's carbon, but it's also about people and people's safety. We've all got battle scars in the closet to do with health and safety and the environmental side. And we need to just manage these really well.
Okay, so Tony, can you tell me more about any cross-industry and any international case studies that NSRI have been involved in?
Yes, Steve. I think that we've got some really good examples there to offer. We have demonstrated that working across industry, and it's not just about oil and gas and renewables, people get a lot of focus on the energy side of things. I think what we've got to really focus on is the wider subsea and marine sector. You know, let's face it, we've been working in defence a lot longer than the energy sector in the offshore environment. And we've been working with the Defence Solutions Centre and oil and gas and renewables looking at autonomy and autonomy collaboration, where we've performed a number of, we'll call it, workshops with core participants, call them hackathons, as some may call them, identify the key areas of focus and expertise in the defence side and likewise in the energy sector. And unfortunately, obviously, the renewable sector is just at its embryonic stage.
Yes.
So a lot of this really drew upon the cross-fertilisation and experience with the oil and gas and the defence sector. Mm-hmm. An example of that, a common area, was communications through water in the splash zone.
Okay.
The other aspect is wave and tidal. We've done a deep dive, identified core areas. These core areas are pretty well known, but it was amazing having a detailed deep dive workshop with appropriate people there. It wasn't just a two-hour lunch and learn session. These don't work. You don't draw out the real value. This was an all-day session in a June evening, a June day, where we started off at 9 a.m. and I had to shut it down at 6:15. Wow. Because people's energy and dynamics to not only acknowledge across the renewable sector, wave and tidal in this particular case, and oil and gas, we saw a huge amount of value and benefits. That then took forward a deep dive report with a clear direction that went to the Scottish government and the UK government, which as a result of that has set some clear initiatives within the Marine for Scotland Working Group, of which we've got representatives from UK government and also industry bodies. That has been very much key to try to move that forward. We're still a bit off from that yet, but it's actually given it much higher focus, contribute to giving the wave and tidal sector much higher focus.
Okay.
Just to answer finally on your question, international, NSRI, we've worked very closely with government and with Subsea UK as the delivery technology commercial partner, where we've worked closely with Japan. This has been a three-year program, of which we've halfway through year, well, concluded year two, of which we've generated 12 cross-international projects, which have equated to 31 million. This is with Japanese organizations of significant scale, large from organizations like Mitsubishi, Yokogawa, as two examples, and many others as well. Very interesting project, offered high value and has created economic impact. They recommend in the area of about 100 jobs through these R&D programs. And technology can do that.
Yes, and I know one of the areas where NSRI have been involved is the collaboration with the UK Defence Solutions Centre and Subsea UK on underwater autonomy. Are you able to tell us just a little bit about that?
Sure. The defence sector and oil and gas industries really recognise how things can be brought together. And we developed a collaboration project mid-2018, of which Subsea UK, Defence Solutions Centre and NSRI worked in partnership. What did that mean? Quite simply, because what it meant was we had representatives from key operators and we had representation from the defence sector. We had a number of engagement workshops, really just brainstorming where are the common areas of interest, such as communications through water, as an example. Mm. Cyber security is another example. Obsolescence. Many of the people within the oil and gas subsea sector recognize these, you know, these as challenges and where things can be brought together. I think when you look at some of the aspects to do with cyber security, as an example, the defense sector have been well and truly on the forefront of that. A lot of that's come from the fintech industry, of course, where there's been a lot of investment in that area. That's not to say the defense sector doesn't have its own secrets, as you could expect. Yes. However, that was recognized as an area of opportunity within oil and gas. I think the other aspect is when we look at the defense side of things, and what they're trying to do to remove personnel, particularly from, we'll call it landing in the foreground of the beach area, etc., was high turbulence in the oxygenization of water. That is a challenge. It's also a challenge within oil and gas, generally recognized as through the splash zone. So those are very much a common area of interest. The three parties, Subsea UK, NSRI, and Defence Solutions Centre, created a programme and a project which has gone public. There's quite a few million put on the platform for this, of which Innovate UK are now running through their programme. And this programme is really geared to bring great minds together, looking at the opportunity in a great deal of depth.
Okay. And while you're in that sort of coastal zone, you know, which is a key transitional area for people, I know you're one of the organizations that's been doing some work on working with the wave and tidal community as well, aren't you?
That's correct, Steve. We've done a number of deep dive projects over the years. And these deep dive projects have included wind, wave, tidal, current, etc. And part of that deep dive was working collaboratively with the ORE Catapult, Offshore Renewable Energy Catapult, where we led the project. They assisted in key areas. And part of that was to have a workshop, bringing key parties together within the supply chain, governing bodies, and have a wide representation. And there's a number of areas that came out of this that of key interest. These areas were such as electrical power distribution, corrosion, inspection, and condition monitoring, mooring and foundation systems, and installation. Some of these I've mentioned already. But the key thing out of this was all about how we can actually manage efficiency moving this forward. The efficiency side of things, we've got to be very careful with this subject matter, of course, because at the end of the day, efficiency governs down to a few things. In renewable energy terms, we speak about lowering the cost of electricity, LCOE. That's taking a life cycle approach. Generally, in oil and gas terms, we speak about net present value. But actually, in a broad sense, the same thing. And we should be speaking on the same platform of terminology. But we really challenged the outcomes of the findings, the research, which were all in the public domain, they're on the NSRI website. We produced a report that was endorsed by the Senior Director for Low Carbon Energy from Scottish Enterprise, and Andy MacDonald. And it was also endorsed by Paul Poolhouse, the MSP. And we came away with four areas that were key to efficiency: governance, policy and culture, technology and innovation, market, as far as UK and international is concerned, process standards and practices, and looking at contract models. There is a misperception, however, and I'm being quite specific on this, within the renewable sector, that the oil and gas sector makes lots of money, and the renewable sector is something different. If we look at the economics within the oil and gas sector, we face many challenges over the years with multiple low economic cycles coming out. We need to bridge and learn from these and just work together. We don't have all the answers, of course, within the NSI, and we don't have all the answers in the oil and gas sector. All we can do is share our knowledge and views, which have actually sustained the industry.
Excellent. Well, it might be worth, we're just into the last few minutes now, so can we just move on to the energy transition for this low carbon future and what's been happening within oil and gas, particularly with the help of NSRI?
Sure. So we look at this area and quite specifically, and we encourage companies. And there's a few case studies where the oil and gas sector is actually a good platform for levering the trials and tests for industry, for technologies within the renewable sector. If we look at this and specifically, there's companies out there that have developed current technology. They're getting used in the decommissioning late life element of the industry. Simply, the lights will be out, but they still need to generate power when the diesel generators have gone. And that's a good case. These are current technologies that developing localized power is a good case study of where these can be done. Within the Oil and Gas Authority, the government body for oil and gas, they've got a clear strategy forward now for integration of concepts addressing all electrification, gas to wire, carbon capture and storage, hydrogen, and then looking at an overall wider energy hub approach, layering the different energies, because at the end of the day, there's not going to be one energy that will provide all the answers. There's going to be multiple layered energy to achieve the end goal.
Yes, yes. Can we summarise the key areas we need to work on to achieve growth in the blue economy?
Steve, sure. I think just to summarise things, at the start of the presentation, we saw the opportunity within the blue economy and the value that the UK economy has achieved from that to date. Somewhere in the region of about 40%, which is a significant contribution for one single nation. The key areas, of course, you've got to get into detail. The devil is in the detail at the end of the day. And these can be summarized as people, technology, environment, health and safety, processes and practices, research and development, and commercialization. Now, as well as heading up NSRI, I've obviously supported the Society of Underwater Technology for the last 2.5 decades. And I'm one of the founders of the Subsea Awareness Course, which is presented globally. This is key. This is key to the people element. It's upskilling, adapting to technology change, education and training. We have to keep ahead of the game. And it's important that we have these rising stars seeing the opportunity, acknowledging the opportunity, and embracing the excitement that the subsea marine community and the wider blue economy can offer. And it's just not about the rising stars, it's about people transferring from one sector to next. And that's also very important. So I think the SUT have contributed significantly to that, where we've had somewhere in the region within our subsea awareness courses, which we present globally, about 2,500 people since it was initiated in the early 90s. That's a significant figure.
Yes.
The other key point that's worthwhile just concluding on is commercialization. Commercialization has got to be the end objective for technology, for innovation, for research development. We see lots of funding organizations, and it's not just about funding as in grant funding, it's also about angel funding, private equity, etc. Companies have to understand commercialization in a more, I'm going to call it, systematic approach. We've got great minds, brilliant minds, great ideas. It's how we can take that step further and be in a position to drive the opportunity. And within NSRI, we've facilitated and assisted a number of companies over the years, really thinking about, this is a good technology here. Where's the market? Where's the commercial value? Where's the product value? And it might not just be a product, it might be an innovation element.
Mm.
How can we help you to add value to your business? This is without being saying this, beg your pardon, this is without taking over the business, but it's opening up the minds.
Yes, yes.
NSRI, what we are about to do is launch a product. This will be not a product to sell, but a product to assist people in thinking. And this will be done on a workshop type basis. We are currently in the final stages of this, and it will be anticipated this will be available, and we shall be launching this in the early part of the summer. And it's really taking the technology mindset. We all speak about technical raised level. We need to start commercialization thinking right at the start. So hopefully that brings value and assists the blue economy growth.
So if people want to find out more about NSRI, if they want to get in contact with you, what should they do?
I think it's fair to say that I'm happy to receive emails and phone calls anytime. I've got a very much open door policy things, but my first port of call would probably be my email address, which is quite simply tony.laing, that's L-A-I-N-G, at nsri.co.uk. Also, you can have a look at our website, which is just www.nsri.co.uk.
Thank you, Tony, for your insights into maximising opportunities and blue growth in our subsea sector. Next week, we'll be introducing you to another aspect of the world of underwater technology. Please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to our podcast. Find out more about SUT at sut.org. Contact me if you'd like to be interviewed at steve.hall at sut.org. My thanks to Emily Boddy for the podcast artwork and theme music. Please all stay safe and healthy, and I'll be back soon with our next guest. Bye for now.